Cold wave will continue through tomorrow. We'll have some moderation at the end of the weekend, and temperatures are likely to reach the 30s for a few days next week. Now, I'm not saying we're going into a warm weather pattern. There will still be more cold air very close to us, but at least for a while the flow will be more westerly, which allows air to come downhill off the Rockies and move eastward and warm up a little bit instead of straight from the central and northern part of Canada. But for today and tonight, tomorrow, still frigid. High today 10, low tonight 0 to 4. Up to about 18 tomorrow and 21 on Sunday. Weekend will be sunny for a good part of the time. Racky Weather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJF.
Thank you, EA. We have mostly sunny skies in Kenosha. It is 3 degrees sunny at the Municipal Airport in Burlington, minus 1, 4 degrees at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport, and at Magnum.media's international headquarters in Racine at WRJN. Sunny skies, 2 degrees. The wind is out of the west. At 10 miles an hour, gusting up to 18, giving us a wind chill index of minus 14. It's negative 9 for the dew point. The relative humidity is 60%, and the barometric pressure continues to rise at 30.24. It is 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. It is a Friday morning. Glenn Klein in the studio. Mayor Dickert agreed to do a little bit of overtime. You'll get time and a half for this. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But we would be remiss to let you go for this month's discussion without talking about former Racine Police Chief Richard Polzin, who passed away just a couple of days ago from a heart attack. And you knew him well, and he had a significant impact on the city, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. Chief Polzin and I grew up with his family. We're all St. Cat's kids. And he was the one when really people had talked about it and there were some best practices going on, but he was the one that really pushed and worked with an amazing group of people in the city that helped create the community policing program in Racine. And you know that they were going through some tough times back then, and Milt, who's sitting next to me here, was part of that. He'd been around in those days, and there were really some tough times, and the chief had kind of gone against the grain and said, listen, I think we need to get out in the neighborhoods and start, you know, making police a common part of the neighborhood, talking with people and creating a relationship. And I think that that's something that, you know, if you look at today, people say, well, you know, no kidding. But I remember, you know, growing up in Racine and Sam Johnson talking about sustainability. And we were like, what's that? Now you talk about sustainability and everybody talks about it. Well, so Chief Polzin really worked. He and some others, Jim Dickert, Marty Defati, you know, all these folks all worked together to create this community policing where they'd go out and buy the houses, rehab them, whatever. And they all did a magnificent job on this. And that is in part what the reason that we are where we are today. And what we did was when we came in, we built upon that model. So we started incorporating additional things to it, like how we do community policing with housing redevelopment and rehab and health services. And the thing, the story that I love to tell about Chief Polzin is every time I saw him, he greeted me with two things, a warm smile and a, so what's going on? He always wanted to know what was going on, and he wanted to know. And we'd have this conversation about what was happening at that time because he had worked here for so long, he knew what was going on in City Hall. But then we'd get into some conversation about how to make it better. So I'd tell him, well, you know, we're adding this housing component to this community policing area, and now we're trying to build up the community centers around there. And, okay, well, that's good. That was good. Well, what do you think about this? And we'd start this conversation. So even though he was retired 15 years, he never stopped thinking and working to create a better community. And as a mayor, how can you ask for anything better than that? So whenever I would see him, I loved it. It was great. It was like, hey, chief. And he'd, hey, John, how's it going? So what's going on? You know, and you just can't ask for anything better than that, knowing that he could just sit back and retire and have fun and do whatever, right? I mean, so he's familiar at the coffee shops. Matter of fact, that day, I believe I saw him at the coffee shop early in the morning. And he's going to be sorely, sorely missed.
When you have a community leader like that, that stays in the community, that stays involved, that's what we're looking for.
Oh, it's what makes a community community. But he, you know, there's people that have visions in the sense that they are visionaries, and they see that dynamic way before other people do.
Yes, called visionaries.
And Sam Johnson was one of those, and Chief Polzin was one of those. And they saw, just like Lindsay Lukowski was with the harbor, they saw a vision for a future, and they made it happen. And can you ask for anything better than that? Because I just think he's going to be sorely missed. He'll be missed by me in a huge, huge way because of the fact that I always loved that smile, that handshake, and the, so what's going on?
Obviously he passed way too soon, but it's pretty cool that he got to see the crime rate drop so precipitously in the city that he really set the stage for.
Yeah, and I will argue that he continued to have a role in that drop because he continued to provide me advice, and we'd have those conversations and bounce some ideas off of each other every once in a while.
Well, thanks for sticking around and sharing some of those thoughts on the just-deceased former Racine Police Chief, Richard Polzin. And I know you got to get going, so
thank you.
Enjoy your weekend.
God bless the family. And, this is two family members of ours that we've lost, Mark Gates and now Chief Polzin. So we've lost two family members in the city.
It's
tragic.
But when that happens, it's good to have family.
Yeah, family's good.
And we appreciate you being part of our radio family.
Thanks.
There he goes, the mayor of the great city of Racine. When we return, it'll be time to talk some community race relations with the civil rights leader and author of the book Only One in the Room, Milt Thompson, on the other side.
One of America's heritage radio stations since 1926. We're your radio friend, WRJN.
Now this news update on Wisconsin Radio Network. I'm Bill Wise. Lawmakers previously passed a bill that opened access to CBD oil for treating.
Talking about the importance of having family gathered around during tough times, and a very appropriate song, Sly and the Family Stone, on your radio friend. It's 17 minutes after 10 o'clock. It is a thank God it's Friday morning. This is Glenn Klein for Community Conversations. Speaking of God, he is the pastor of the Living Stones Charismatic Fellowship, the local civil rights leader, and the author of the fantastic book on race, The Only One in the Room. Please welcome back, alive and in person this week, Mr. Pastor Reverend Milt Thompson. Hello, Pastor.
Hello, Glenn.
We were a little concerned about you last week.
Yeah.
Thought the rapture might have happened, and I missed it.
No comment.
What do you mean, no comment? It obviously wasn't the rapture.
Yep, that's true. No, it just, for some reason, it slipped my mind because my wife, who's a teacher, was on vacation. So it changed our schedule completely.
Well, I didn't take it personally. You joined us on the phone. It's a different dynamic on the phone, isn't it?
Oh, it is, because you don't know when to jump in or what the other person is mugging, if they're shocked, if they're chagrin, if they're, you just don't get that kind of feedback.
Have you ever seen an expression on my face that you would describe as chagrined?
No.
No?
Not to this point.
I don't get chagrined. Not on the radio, anyway. I'll tell you what I've been chagrined about, though, is the response to this kidnapping and assault in the city of Chicago, where four kids kidnapped this special needs young man, 18 years old. His mom drops him off to be with a friend, one of the kids that assaulted him. And then they videotape the assault. You beautiful humans have probably seen it on television. And then torture him for a couple of days and post it on Facebook. And, of course, it's a horrific crime.
Yes, it is.
Needless to say. But there's a racial component to it because they said F white people, F Donald Trump, as they're torturing this, four black kids are torturing this white special needs young man. And yet there are people in our society that don't want to consider that the same as if you would just reverse it and it'd be four white kids criticizing President Obama as a torturer of black kid. What, as a civil rights leader, how do you respond to that?
Boy, I've heard people, and it's wrong, and I don't agree with it. I've heard black people, because I've sat in discussions, where people have said, you can only be the victim of a hate crime if you're black, because blacks not having power cannot perpetrate, you know, a crime against whites. And to me, that's such a stupid argument, because anyone who perpetrates that kind of destructive behavior on another person is doing a hate crime, or is doing something that robs a person of their civil rights and you know, their dignity. So it's horrible. But I guess, and you and I were talking about it before, it's like when black youth were knocking out Jewish people. I remember seeing it on the news in New York, but it wasn't, it should have been like, because it was systematic, it should have been like, oh my goodness, but it was downplayed as much. Now, if it had been white kids knocking out black people, it would have been like, you know, a top news story ever.
Well, a Democratic strategist who's an African-American woman and is the former press secretary for Bernie Sanders, named Simone Sanders, no relation. Well, we're all related, but you know what I'm saying. She was on CNN with Don Lemon, and here's what she said. I can't say that it's a hate crime. So was this for hate of Donald Trump, for the president-elect, for the things he has said, or pure hate of white people? That matters. Because if we start going around and any time someone says something or does something really egregious, really bad, and as sickening as is in this connection with the president-elect or Donald Trump or even President Obama, for that matter, because of their political leanings, this is slippery territory. This is not a hate crime, she said. Hate crimes are because of a person's racial ethnicity, their religion, their gender, their disability, your political leanings, because someone doesn't like your politics. They do something bad to you. That is not a hate crime.
Boy, talk about
Simone Sanders, the former spokesperson and the African American woman, a Democratic strategist for Bernie Sanders.
But how do you sit there, think about it, especially in the environment we live in now? How do you parse out race from politics?
And people think, on the left, that a hate crime cannot be committed on somebody that's in the majority, against a white person. That's what they think.
Yeah, that has to be it. And of course, that's absurd. That's absurd. Listening to Fox and Tucker Carlson, he tried to put forth the argument that he hated using the term hate crime because he was concerned about freedom of speech and was concerned that after a while you censor what people think, not what they do. But in this instance, you don't have to make that distinction between what a person says and what they do, because they were assaulting another person and they were speaking the hate, and then, like nitwits, they put it on Facebook. So there isn't the nuance that you might have if someone said something and you have to discern whether or not it's racially based. It was. They made it clear. Anytime you mention, hey, I'm doing this because you're white, that has the racial component. It makes it clear that it's based on racial hate.
I don't know that they pointed out that this special needs young man was white as they were torturing him. But on the video, they do say F white people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, forget about Donald Trump. But here's one thing that's true. Even on our national news that we receive every hour, yesterday as they were reporting it, they didn't report about the anti-Trump statements. They didn't report the anti-white statements. They just reported the facts of the case that this kid had been kidnapped and been tortured and had escaped. There is such a hypocrisy and a double standard in the mainstream media that if it was, again, the situation were reversed and the kid was black and the perpetrators were white, you know you'd hear about that. Or if they were saying anti-Obama things, that's for sure. So, for example, This woman, this Muslim woman in New York, said that she had been attacked by some Trump supporters and had her hijab taken off. Mm-hmm. And it turned out not to be true. You heard it all over the media. It happened in New York. She just was making up a story because her very conservative father would have been upset that she was out that late. So she made up the story, made the national news, and they reported specifically that it was Trump supporters. And it did not happen. And so my question for you, Mill Thompson, as an African-American man, as a person who's dedicated his life to the issues of race, how important is it for those in our society to treat these things equally to further the goals of the African-American community?
Yeah, whenever there's discrimination, whenever there's hate, it has to be treated fairly.
And equally?
And equally. It has to be treated fairly and equally. I don't know how you're going to get to that, though, when there is a preconceived, accepted narrative that's expected by those who are the ones who choose what's on the news and what's not on the news. You're old enough to remember that Al Sharpton became famous for the Tawana Bradley situation. Brawley, where there was an African-American young lady who said that she was abused and, I believe, raped by a white man, mm-hmm. and they just hopped on it, and then they found out that it wasn't true. I don't know how you get to fairness and how you get to accuracy when there is a narrative that's preferred. White people, if white people do something to black people, oh yeah, of course, because white people are racist. If black people do something to white people, then those who are liberals say, well, of course, it's the accumulation of years of oppression. It's because of joblessness. It's because of all of this. There's a narrative that they allow to become prominent. There's another narrative that they squelch.
Philosophically, though, what is your opinion on hate crime legislation? Should specific criminal acts be articulated in a different way based on somebody's preconceived notion of what hate is? Or you have to judge somebody's heart. You got to judge what's in their soul.
See, to me, when you're dealing with assault, somebody's beating somebody with a baseball bat, hopefully you've got laws that address that, whether it's hate or not. And given the circumstance, given what the crime is, there should be punishment that's commensurate with it. To add additional consequences because it's racially based,
or to distinguish between somebody who is just assaulted in a random way and somebody that is targeted because of their race or religion or ethnicity or sex or sexual orientation, you have to judge somebody's soul. And I think it's, in a different way than Simone Sanders said, a slippery slope. I think it is significant and serious government overreach.
Yeah, I would agree with you to...
Because this is what happens. You get a situation like this, you've got to make a judgment call as to... And then you have an argument and a continued schism in our society over race. It's unnecessary.
Right. Well, then you have the over-the-top instances where there really is a racial component, like Dylann Roof. You know, let's face it, that you don't have to judge the intent of someone's heart if while they're firing
the gun. He's going to die. He's going to be put to death for those crimes.
Right.
And what's the difference? What's in his heart? What his soul caused him to do? He murdered people in a church targeting them who were kind to him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's going to die. What a difference does it, to quote the former Secretary of State, paraphraser, what difference does it make?
Yeah, no, that's true. I think you do get into a slippery slope when you're trying to discern what caused the person to do it, unless, again, the person says it. And let's face it, we live in a time where if people are going to perpetrate hate and assault people, and it's race-based, the majority of them are not going to use the N-word while they're swinging the bat or whatever, because that just isn't what happens. People who have that in their heart and who discriminate against people today, they generally do it in a very subtle way, to where what would you do? Would you look at all of their emails to see if there's any, which the government would. Would you look at all of their emails and would you look at all their correspondences to see if they have a track record of this?
The reason that I have such a problem with it is because it causes continued division in our society over issues like race. And we need to be about bringing people together and not categorizing people, but seeing everybody as a beautiful human, everybody as valuable and unique and precious and worth the protection of the law in an equal way. That's why I've got such a bone to pick with it.
That's true. But then I sit and I think of other kinds of situations and the fact that there are times where mentioning the race or the ethnicity of a person makes sense. 9/11's one of them. There would be.
What do you mean?
If a crime was perpetrated that is specific to an intent, 9/11, it was Islamic terrorists. If you don't mention that, now we're in a bigger discussion about media and media coverage.
But if the 19 hijackers would have not all perished, they wouldn't have been brought up on hate crimes. They would have just been tried and probably put to death for mass murder.
So what you're saying is the law, if it's applied fairly, no matter what the circumstance, whether it's based on ethnicity or religion, would work itself out and the consequences would be just.
Yeah, see, this is a response. The answer is yes, by the way. This is a response, of course, to the old Jim Crow laws and the ability of white people, primarily in the South, to like do things like lynch people, lynch African Americans with impunity. And so that obviously that was a pendulum way over on the wrong side of the scale. But now what we always do, we take it way too far the other way to bring it back towards center. We've got to come back to center on this thing. And it, because why should we even be talking about race right now, given the situation? This was just a heinous crime that these young people perpetrated against a special needs young man. Everybody, whether they're on the left or the right or black or Asian or Hispanic or Jewish or atheist or Christian, Muslim, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody should be in agreement. This was wrong, and right. These kids should suffer for it.
Right. You would think that, except you and I know, and the listeners know, given the narrative that's been spun out of the political climate, you know, Donald Trump is a racist, people who support him is a racist. It's like race is the red cape before the bull now. And it's interjected into every situation, no matter what.
If it can be, they do it.
If it can be.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that we continue our community conversation on race, because we have got to be about solutions versus pointing fingers and placing blame. This is Glenn Klein along with Mill Thompson. It is a Saturday morning. The great Tom Carco is awaiting us in the news center with this hour's update around the bend.
It's winter. Your diesel needs power service. Add diesel fuel supplement plus
quality business cards for only $9.99. That's $9.99, and your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. Just go to Vistaprint.com. Use promo code 4646 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com. Promo code 4646.
This is a news flash. Your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host made a mistake. Thank you, Mill Thompson. It is Friday morning.
Tom Carkle in the WRJS.
There'll be more cold air very close to us, but at least for a while the flow will be more westerly, which allows air to come downhill off the Rockies and move eastward and warm up a little bit instead of straight from the central and northern part of Canada. But for today and tonight, tomorrow, still frigid. High today 10, low tonight 0 to 4. Up to about 18 tomorrow and 21 on Sunday. Weekend will be sunny for a good part of the time. Racky weather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJN.
Thank you, EA. 21. That's going to the beach weather. Right now, it's mostly sunny in Kenosha and 3 degrees. A goose egg in Burlington at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport, 4 degrees. And at Racine's WRJN, it is sunny, 2 degrees. The winds are brisk. They're out of the west at 10 to 18 miles an hour, giving us a wind chill of minus Ernie Banks, minus 14. For you lack of Cub fans out there. It is minus 9 for the dew point. The relative humidity is 60%, and the barometric pressure is still rising at 30.24. It is 20 minutes to 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. I'm lucky I have Milt Thompson in the studio with me because got to keep me honest.
Yep, I do. Otherwise, you'll tell us that it's like 2075 or something.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it could be Saturday. It is Saturday somewhere. Just like it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yep.
So you're clad in your Packer regalia. And how are you feeling about the big game? It's supposed to be 13 degrees at Lambeau on Sunday.
Yeah, watching what the Giants have done twice at Lambeau in the playoffs doesn't give me great confidence. They're just teams that are made for the playoffs. The Giants, one of them. The other team is the Seahawks, you know, in the NFC.
But we have number 12. In your roster, number one in your heart, Aaron Rodgers.
We do. See, I'm a pragmatist. We do. The other thing that I've noticed in the last number of years is to get to the Super Bowl, you've got to have a killer defense. And the Giants happen to have a killer defense.
And we are hurting in the secondary.
Right.
Significantly. Well, see, Milt Thompson isn't just an expert on politics and race and religion, ladies and gentlemen. He also knows his football.
The Packers ride the momentum of a 6-game win streak into...
Satchmo by request. Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World on your radio, friend. 13 minutes until 11 o'clock. It is, thank God, it's Friday morning. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, all wrapped up into one nice, neat, and yes, lovable package. Glenn Klein, along with local civil rights leader and author Milton Thompson of the book The Only One in the Room, and Louis Armstrong, one of the great American treasures of all time.
Yes, he is. Along with Duke Ellington and a bunch of, unfortunately, they became famous later in life because of race. They didn't get the recognition that they deserved.
And all the guys and gals that pioneered rock and roll music almost were all African American. And they had their songs ripped off by white artists and never got the royalties that they deserved.
Right. The one that pops into my head, because I can see him chicken walking across the stage.
Little Richard.
No, Chuck Berry.
And Chuck Berry.
But
Sam Cooke.
Yeah. Yeah. What a shame, you know. And sometimes people go, well, why do you even bring that up? Because that was in the past. Because it gives you insight into why blacks still... are sensitive on issues of race. It's because if things persisted decade after decade, and to be honest with you, some of them century after century, then it's sort of difficult to set it aside. Think of Jewish people.
As I often do.
As you often do. Think of Jewish people in the Holocaust. If someone would say, okay, it's been, you know, 60 years, it's time for 60-some years. It's time for Jewish people to get over the...
People say it all the time.
But it's, no. Some situations, you know, the Holocaust, the what Mao did, the Cultural Revolution, where 30, 40 million people, they're just some historic Genghis Khan ransacking Europe.
The killing fields of Cambodia.
There are things that have happened.
Stalin.
That hopefully people will never get past because they become signposts to us. that they should never happen again.
The Cubs not winning the World Series for 108 years.
It's not in the same category.
It's not. There he is, keeping me honest again. He's Milton Thompson. I've got Milt's book. I can't tell you how much I enjoy this book. The Only One in the Room, A Lifetime of Observations on Race. This is precious to me. And here's one thing that I've noticed about books that are profound, kind of like the Bible.
Okay.
You pick up the Bible once in a while, don't you, Pastor?
Yeah. Don't even ever compare.
No, I'm comparing your book to the Bible. I mean, if the president-elect said that his favorite book after The Art of the Deal was the Bible, I can say that.
Okay. Well,
here's what I can do with profound books. I can open to any page and look down, and something is going to be powerful in it. And I've done it many times with your book, and I want to do it right now just to get your comments. As God is my witness, and Milt Thompson, I have not, there's no markings in this book or anything like that as far as part, right?
True.
All right, so I just opened to page 112. In 1991, a black man was pulled over by police in Los Angeles, taken out of his car and told to get to the ground. He was then beaten repeatedly by white police officers. The Rodney King incident drew national attention when someone videotaped the beating, not unlike the outrage over the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Let me say up front that I believe Rodney King was guilty. He was on drugs, and his refusal to get on the ground and allow police officers to handcuff him put him in jeopardy. But the contentious debates about his case and others revealed the differences between the perceptions of whites and blacks. See? Boy, ain't that the truth.
Yeah, it
is. And it reminds me of when O.J. Simpson was acquitted for killing his ex-wife, Nicole Simpson Brown. The difference between the African-American community's response and the rest of the country's was stark. Why is that?
See, I don't know. It's funny. A few months ago, I looked at a study done by the Pew Research Council, and they looked at racial attitudes and the difference between whites and blacks on a variety of things. Politically, they looked at differences as far as income, differences as far as hope, differences as far as, you know, perception of the value of education and all of this. It's an extensive study. And as I looked at the data from that, I thought, oh my goodness, just like the Rodney King, like O.J. Simpson and the others. I looked at it and I said, it really hasn't changed. Blacks and whites, and it's tough to overgeneralize, but given the data from that, as a whole, see the world through completely different lenses. And it's a shame.
Not only is it a shame, it is causing our society greatly this divisive perspective. But again, I think with the O.J. Simpson and the Rodney King situation and so many others, like Michael Brown, mm-hmm. that you talked about, the African-American community has been so downtrodden by the legal system and by law enforcement that it's like with the O.J. Simpson thing, I think all over the country, but certainly in Los Angeles, it was like, finally, we got mm-hmm. over one on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was like that.
It's like funny. Turnabout is fair play.
Well, it's like we were talking about sports, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but if you ever watched a game where they screwed up, the refs screwed up on one call, and then they do a makeup call,
yeah.
and then you're so overjoyed. Well, Rodney King and O.J., those were makeup calls.
Yeah.
And there need to be more makeup calls, because trust me, the refs have thrown a lot of flags on black people throughout history. But and again, I don't want to trivialize it by using a sports analogy.
You didn't trivialize
that. I guess I just did.
No, I don't think it's trivial at all. I think it's a good analogy, actually, a good metaphor. So 15 yards against the African-American community for too much forward movement at once.
Yeah, but then somebody else is holding on the other side, so the two calls cancel out each other and we don't get the 15 yards.
We were talking about why bring up these things from the past, because if we don't know our history, we are apt to repeat it.
Yeah.
And that is not a beneficial thing. So I'm on Facebook, which I am frequently, and I see somebody post this list of black inventors in the history of the country, and I reposted it on your wall. Mm-hmm. Starting with the air conditioning unit, which, you know, we really don't need here, but a guy named Frederick M. Jones invented the air conditioning in 1949. And the list goes on and on and on. We don't hear about this in our schools.
Oh, no. No. And what happens is this, having participated in Black History Month over and over again, when I was in Kenosha Unified, I had to tell the people who were doing it at one of the schools, you need to come up with a better list, because they came up with the list of George Washington Carver and, you know, the top 10, the usual 10, the ones that everyone knows. And they didn't mention Benjamin Banneker, who laid out the plan for the city of Washington, D.C., helped develop the White House, the architecture for that. He was a mathematician. He was also a genius. Jefferson, he almost made Jefferson believe that blacks were not inferior. And so,
wow.
Yeah. So you look at that and then you go, but then you look at the list that you sent me.
Here's one that would be near and dear to your heart. George T. Grant, in 1899, invented the golf tee.
Yeah, there you go.
Robert F. Fleming Jr., speaking of African Americans being involved in the music industry and rock and roll, in 1886, invented the guitar.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And people would say, and even when I saw that, I thought, but there was the lyre and, you know, there were other instruments. But let's face it, most of the things that we invent are predicated upon the knowledge of previous inventions, but that doesn't take the genius out of it.
Thomas Marshall, in 1872, invented the fire extinguisher.
Pretty handy thing to have.
I wonder if that's where they got the term fire marshal.
That's pretty good. That's pretty. The one that's ironic and the saddest one is Charles Drew, who invented the storage of blood plasma. Died in a car accident because he was critically injured. He was bleeding out, and the nearest black hospital was so far away. And the white hospital would have had the invention of storing plasma that would have saved his life. But because blacks were not allowed to go to white hospitals, he died. So to me, that's one of the horrible ironies of history and of racism.
When Sammy Davis Jr. lost his eye, he was very good friends with Frank Sinatra. And this is documented in the film on Frank Sinatra's life that is absolutely incredible that HBO did. And Davis was taken to a hospital that would not allow, as they used to call them, colored folk. Into the hospital, Frank Sinatra rushed down to where Sammy Davis Jr. was and got him to a hospital. And he lost his eye, but it saved his life.
Wow. Isn't that incredible?
Unbelievable.
But, and again, people say, why do you bring this stuff up? You bring it up because, unfortunately, residue, because I don't believe that every white person's racist. I just don't. But when you see
What percentage of people do you think?
No, of course I'd never answer that. I just
What do you think?
A low percentage of people, causatively racist, intentionally racist. 5%.
Really?
3%.
I think it's way higher than that.
No. I believe that the majority of people have now reached a point. Listen, you do realize that some of the worst segregationists and some of the people who perpetrated and lived in the Jim Crow times have apologized to black people for some of the activities.
That's what I was going to say. Could you imagine having lived through the civil rights movement or to see what, and he lived to see some of the accolades that he received, Jackie Robinson, certainly his wife received, his wife lived to see them retire his number for the entire major leagues. Or some of Martin Luther King Jr.'s family to see what has happened and the fact that regardless of his policies, regardless of what you think about him as a president, the fact that we elected an African American to the White House,
right?
That's pretty optimistic, I think.
Yeah, it is. And since blacks voting as a vote, as a bloc, could not have put Obama in the White House, it means there are a lot of white people of goodwill who voted for him, you know, who unfortunately people have forgotten about, because to hear the dialogue now about the last election, you would believe that all those same white people are racist and holding on to God and their guns and, you know, all of that.
And their religion.
Yeah, how quickly we forget that the very same people, a lot of the same people, voted for President Obama. So, no, I don't believe the majority of white people are racist. I just don't.
I just think it's more than 3 or 5%.
But my point was this. I still believe there's a residue. And I think when you watch a white police officer like the one in Tulsa shoot an unarmed black, motorist for no reason, who's unarmed, that's the residue.
Yeah.
That shows that we've still got a problem.
Well, he is the author of the book On a Lifetime of Observations on Race, the only one in the room, Milton Thompson, also the pastor of Living Stones Charismatic Fellowship. I feel a sermon coming on.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine, FM 98.1 Kenosha, and FM 99.9 Racine.
Your Thank God It's Friday Hour of Power follows WRJN covering the world.
Trump on U.S. intelligence, brace for bad weather. I'm Ann Cates. President-elect Donald Trump will get a briefing this afternoon from top U.S. intelligence officials about their conclusion Russia interfered in the election. Trump has said he doubts Russia was involved.